All right, ladies, gentlemen, welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast, episode 139. That is a lot of these things here. This is one of our more special episodes we've ever done. So last night we recorded an episode at Tap House 15. Tap House 15 is just an awesome bar. It's where we also run our monthly Verbal Shenanigans comedy show. Coming up on March 23rd, get your tickets. They're free, but I think they also might be sold out. So if you want to go, you better call them now. Now, last night we got to sit with Jim Miller and Dan Miller, brothers, UFC fighters. Okay, Jim just fought on two pay-per-views ago. They're both from Sparta, New Jersey, so local guys. And just really, really, really good interview. About MMA and growing up and work being brothers and being family men, and just very proud of this episode of the podcast. It's a great one, and just really cool guys. So what makes this podcast possible, or helps, you know, keep the lights on a little bit, is some of the sponsors. Now, Trivia Revolution is a trivia company that is based out of New Jersey, all different locations. I host for them at Tap House 15 on Wednesdays, and they're fueled by craft beer. I mean, what's better than that? Each week you can win a prize to different breweries all over New Jersey. You can win prizes to the restaurant and just come play trivia with your buddies. There's New Jersey craft beer members get extra points. If you bring a bonus item each week, you get points. It's just a good time. So that's Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, the other sponsors that make this podcast possible are also the fabric of the craft beer industry in New Jersey, two awesome breweries. The first one is Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. If you go right there on the main street, right in the old bank building, you get to go try some of their seasonally inspired ales, okay? Go see Joe in his Manskirt. Yeah, that's correct. They just put their Pfefferbock, just went back on tap, and they've got the big St. Patrick's Parade in Hackettstown this Sunday coming up. They're going to be open at 11, serving their Irish Red named Rose Matter all day. So go give them some love on Facebook and Instagram, and that is Manskirt Brewing, okay? And the other brewery that makes this podcast possible and helps us out just a little bit is Demented Brewing. And they're just a fantastic brewery out of Middlesex, New Jersey. Delicious beers. They're doing something new all the time. They got barrel programs, sour programs. Every Tuesday they're doing something either through the Randall or something on cask. Just really amazing stuff. They just released their Imperial Red Ale, which is Vermilion, okay? And they're going to be releasing their Black Coffee IPA, which is a collaboration with New Jersey Craft Beer Cafe Negro on Sunday. And that is just a great brewery to go to and check out. So, without further ado, here are the Miller brothers, both Jim and Dan, live from Tap House 15. And I really hope you enjoy the podcast.
Shenanigans are cruel and tragic, which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, Mike Berlew, welcome back to another Verbal Shenanigans podcast. We're on location again.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's weird not being in your little house here, but, you know, we'll make it work.
Listen, you don't have to insult the size of my house every day, every time. I know.
Well, I kind of like it. That's why I do it every time.
My house is, it's not even my house, my rental property at this point, thanks to the ex-wife, is basically the size of the room we're sitting in right now. Maybe. But you know what? I'm happy.
You are.
And I'm even happier to be here. We're at Tap Out 15, which is, I feel like I kind of live here. Second home for you, buddy. Between the trivia and the comedy and everything else that's going on.
And you being passed out in the back in the parking lot.
With that, then, no, you weren't supposed to tell anybody about that. But I'm sitting here, and I just want to throw it out there, guys, before I introduce you. Our co-host here, Mike, said that he could take the both of you tonight
There's three here now, so I just had to factor in that, you know.
Take the both of you in a the first ever Verbal Shenanigans MMA fight.
Yeah. Scott, I had the weight advantage. They haven't been to heavyweight levels. So,
That's true.
Clearly.
Have you seen me?
They don't know how hard you hit.
No. Should I? Scott, I should have looked up some stuff before this podcast.
But I'm very happy. This actually came together quick, which is kind of cool. But I want to welcome, you may know them from the UFC, the Miller brothers, Jim, Dan, and then Pat from their podcast. I don't know, Pat, I don't know your last name. We've only talked through the cell phone. Yeah. All right, Pat, I think it's better that way.
The adopted Miller brother, number three.
And Dan, thank you so much for doing this. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having
awesome.
Us.
That's awesome. So we are sitting here in Tap House 15, which is in, I guess it's technically Jefferson or Wharton. I don't know. Every time you say something to someone, it's Jefferson or Wharton. Mm. And you guys are from originally, if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me, but you're originally from Sparta, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we're from Sparta.
So you grew up in Jersey, okay? Now, Sparta, I guess for people who don't know, like I live in Rockaway, and then I lived in Denville. You definitely get like a little bit of both, right? You get a little bit of like the country outdoors vibe, but you also get a lot of like cool places like this. Well, suddenly now we have a couple cool places, but so you guys grew up together in an area where... I mean, I still see it in your blood. I see it in your Instagram. I see it in just like your personality. You definitely get some outdoorsman, handyman, brewer. We'll get into all that stuff in a little bit. But you guys obviously still have a sense of, as the pizza gets here. That looks delicious. Delicious. It's going to be hard to do this with the pizza there. Mm-hmm. But
it won't be there long.
But you definitely have that vibe to you, and that's a compliment, actually. It doesn't seem like you're like clean cut, like neck tattoo, like that typical UFC fighter. You guys have a certain vibe to you, and I like that.
Thank you. Yeah, you know what? We're actually kind of like kind of the hillbillies of Sparta anyway. I mean, you know, there weren't...
When you're the hillbillies of Sparta, you're really the hillbillies.
Well, you know, Sparta's a little...
Sparta's my favorite town in Jersey. I'm just telling you that, by the way.
Well, thank you for that.
Not because of you.
No, thank you.
Sparta was great till the Miller brothers
the Millers
showed up.
Yeah.
Till the Millers did all that fighting in Crow's parking lot.
That's not true.
No, never in Crow's. No, never in Crow's.
Sorry, go ahead.
But, I think there was only like one other kid that I went to high school with that hunted, you know, and it was like, or, you know, they graduated with me. So we were definitely a little bit more on the outdoorsy blue collar side than a lot of the people that we went to high school with and stuff like that. But Sparta's surrounded by, you know, it's in Sussex County, and you're surrounded by farmland.
You are.
Our father is pretty much born and raised in Sparta, and it was all farmland and stuff like that. And I mean, he grew up and started a family there and back when it was dirt roads and stuff.
Yeah, so. I wanted to get into that with the two of you. Growing up, like, okay, usually MMA and fighting, like, everyone's got a different story. But even, like, fighting and boxing, a lot of times you hear some of the greats come out of, impoverished neighborhoods, struggle. They get into boxing and fighting as a discipline and stuff like that. How did you guys get into MMA or whatever it was, jiu-jitsu or whatever it was, in Sparta? Like,
we both of us wrestled our whole lives.
Okay.
And, it was that kind of after high school, after Jim went to college, and we had that. We had been competing our whole lives. It's just something we need, had to do again.
Right.
You know, we missed the competition, competing against somebody. And, both of us watched the UFC and Pride at the time, and we were interested in it and thought we could do well. So it just kind of came out. It's like we would screw around at work and stuff like that. We both worked for our father. And it's like,
what'd your father do?
He was a construction framing.
Okay.
So we used to build, you know, new house, mostly new houses.
Mm-hmm. So you grew up in like kind of a outdoors, hand work with your hands kind of environment.
Yeah. Yes.
See, my father was a but very, again, blue collar kind of guy. Did had a shop in Bayonne for 25, 26 years, putting car stereos in, repairing TVs, putting the old antennas up, and basically everything phased him out. Cars came with good stereos. Alarm systems came in houses and came in car. All that phased down. But he's still a very blue-collar guy. I did the opposite. Like, I didn't listen to shit he said, and every day I regret it. I regret it. I see guys who can build on their own and frame out walls and put in outlets and all that stuff, and I regret the hell out of it because it's like, to me, that guy possesses way more knowledge than my stupid communications degree. That, you know, like, this is a guy that saves himself money on the daily, you know, like, they can do things, they can teach a skill. To me, it's like, I read Of Mice and Men in college and did a paper on it, and what did it do for me, you know? But I admire, like those guys, and I think that's a big problem, like, today. Like, it, just in general, we I know we're going off on a tangent, but we encourage kids, college is for everyone, college, college, mm-hmm. college. You know, maybe that kid can go 8-9 months and become a plumber and make a killing and then do something else later in life. How do you tell an 18-year-old this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life?
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I mean, that was kind of one of my problems is I always, in high school, I enjoyed science. I enjoyed biology and chemistry and stuff and was good at it. And I was good at math. Just numbers have always kind of... Right. I mean, I almost got into a fight playing high-pitched softball. The guy miscounted. And he yelled at us. And I was going to set him straight. So I ended up like, oh, you know, kind of dealing with the, you know, or following the pressure of everybody. Oh, well, you're good in math, you're good in science, you should be an engineer. Right. And I went to school, and it's like, after like a month or two, I was like, man, this is just, it's just not for me. Like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see myself doing it, you know, later in life, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I ended up taking a little time off, and that's when we started training, and...
Yeah.
Now I get punched in the head for a living.
Now I forget all the science and math stuff I was so good at.
Yep.
You know, it's funny because I teach for a living, and I feel for the kid who, like, he's saying to himself, "This is not for me," over and over again in his life. And my dad tells me, like, when he was our age, I think, Jim, you're 33, right?
Yep.
And Dan, you're
35.
So we're all the same age here. When he was our age in school, there was, like, Votech wasn't looked at as, like, this, let's send the dum-dums. It was more of, like, let's send the kids who are interested in working their hands. And he said they had this amazing, like, shop and Votech program. And why that somehow got filtered out. And yet, if you're going for a job today, other than getting punched in the head for a living, what jobs are open? It's the plumbing. It's the carpentry. It's the tradesmen. So it's like, it is amazing that we've somehow got away from that at some point. And it really is frustrating. I know I went off on a little tangent. But so who started fighting first?
We actually started exactly at the same time.
Okay.
We started training together. And I think it took at least like 6 months for us to go to practice without the other one.
Well, what was it? What was it? MMA or jiu-jitsu?
We started out as jiu-jitsu with the intent of fighting. We stepped into the ring for our first fight 6 months after taking jiu-jitsu, basically to the day. And on fight night, our first fights, he fought first fight of the night, second fight of the night? First fight of the night, I fought third fight of the night. So there was a 15 minutes in between us.
Where are these taking place? Are they taking place in like a...
Those were... they were down in Atlantic City, and it was inside a ring. It was probably like a six-sided ring that was maybe 12 feet across. I mean, it was like a phone booth. You could be in your corner and reach and touch gloves with the other guy. it was tiny. Like fighting in a phone booth. So, it was, we were there together, and that's kind of what one of the things that I feel is kind of given us that ability to have success in this as quickly as we did is that we had somebody there at practice with us every day pushing us, you know.
Now, Dad was into this, or what about Mom at the time?
Oh, no, both of them hated it.
Oh.
Both of them didn't want us to do it. You know, like I wrestled in college. You know, we grew up wrestling. I wrestled in college at Virginia Tech for a little bit.
Are we on Facebook right now?
And
sorry,
it's all right. And you know, like my parents came out. You know, and they traveled as much as they could to see me wrestle in college. And you knew that they were going to come and watch the fights.
Yeah.
When we first started, they weren't fans. They didn't want us to do it.
Interesting. Like, so you're saying they didn't want to do it, but obviously they had to allow you to do it.
We were. I was 21. He was 23. They weren't stopping us at that point.
But as far as the fighting and wrestling, like Dad, when you were younger, mm-hmm. where all this like started, you were. Did Dad let you go, or was Mom never?
Oh no, it? Mom. Our mother wrestling comes from our mom's side.
Okay.
You know, our dad wrestled a little bit in high school. One of our uncles was a 2-time national champ, 4-time All-American for Lehigh.
Wow.
He was also ranked number one in the world at one point.
Really, you can put it right on that shirt over there. We're very official here.
It's all right. you know, so our mom, she knows wrestling.
Right.
You know, and she kind of brought our dad into wrestling. When her younger brother,
that sounds great.
Yeah,
that would love that.
Yeah, her younger brother, who was, you know, 14 years younger than her, you know, was wrestling in, or maybe 10 years younger, was, you know, wrestling in high school and stuff like that. Or they were together, and you know, our dad, that's when he really learned wrestling, is watching our other uncle. So, but yeah, they weren't fans of us doing MMA. And then we had our first grappling tournament, and all of a sudden they were like, wait a second.
Loved it.
Yeah, they're like, this is pretty, you know, they're good, and this is pretty cool. It's kind of like wrestling. Like, I mean, and that was just grappling. There weren't any strikes involved, but it went from our dad not wanting us to do it, and why do you want to get punched in the face, to as soon as we had that grappling tournament, he was the biggest fan of MMA you've ever met. And a week later he's like, oh, couldn't that guy have gone for a Kimura there? And he doesn't even know what a Kimura is, and like there was probably only one guy, you know, just completely thought he knew more than he knew. Yeah. Still to that point, but yeah, they kind of fell in love with it. And our mom, obviously, you know, she's our mother, she gets nervous, our dad gets nervous, but our mom shows it, you know, our wives show it. It's just, they care about us, so they don't. It's not as easy. I mean, I get nervous for when Dan fights,
of course,
like that. So,
I mean, that's interesting how you went into jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. Were they more figuring if you went to more grappling style, be more understanding, or it's just the second you hear, okay, I'm going to throw a punch, they get more concerned with that.
It was even the grappling until they saw,
what it was.
Okay. Because they didn't even know. Our mom had never, I don't think Mom had ever seen any, you know, any fighting.
She would turn it off. Yeah, it's barbaric.
Or anything. you know, our dad had watched it a little bit, but he didn't really understand it. Yeah, he didn't enjoy it.
On that point, you guys are my age. When you got into fighting, you said 21, 23, something like that, whatever it was, like officially. What was MMA at the time? Like, was it in the early years of USC? Like, where were you seeing it, like, where you were getting exposed to it?
Like, mostly pay-per-view.
Pay-per-view.
Yeah, DirecTV have it a little bit.
So it was like the old, I took your plate.
You did take my plate. It's all right. I got it back.
Good move, Scott. I can't. That's why we don't get these kind of guests, you know?
remember when you took the Ultimate Warriors plate? He's dead now.
Yeah.
No, but you were exposed to, like, the UFC. Was that, like, those initial, like, Ken Shamrock days?
When we were younger in high school, basically, we went to wrestle for Sparta, and our coach, we went to East Stroudsburg, a camp, and your coach was there, and he had the tapes. He had, like, UFC 1, 2, 3, you know, going up.
With the geese and everything.
Yeah. So, you know, he kind of showed us. That was the first time I had seen it. I've heard about it, but it's the first time I've seen it. And, you know, he kind of exposed us to it. But it was always an interest of mine. It was the same thing as throughout my whole career, I always treated it as a match. It was always almost like a wrestling match to me. It was never, I want to go punch the guy in the face because I'm mad at him.
Right.
I every event that I ever fought in was, you know, it was just a sport. You know, and that's kind of the way I was looking at it. Like, I'd compete again. I'm going to do something to compete. And there is really nothing more thrilling than beating somebody, making them submit,
yeah,
basically, saying they didn't want to be in there with you. So, yeah, it was just itching for that that kind of adrenaline rush.
Now, you two are brothers, both training and similar things and stuff like that. Does sibling rivalry come into it? Did you guys ever get into major blowouts together? Did you ever fight together? Or were you always on the training side together?
As kids, Dan and I never really fought.
Never. You know?
I mean, he'd pick on me here and there. But
there was never a Thanksgiving where he took the turkey leg and you're like, you
know what?
Son of
after
a...
we started training.
No wedgies, nothing?
There was a Thanksgiving after we started training. Before that, I went to, you know, when I graduated high school and then I went to college, I came back and I was a little bit bigger and I kind of closed the gap on him. Because there was a point where he was 70 pounds heavier than me. I mean, he's 70 pounds heavier than me right now, but I know how to handle myself.
Yeah.
So
we've seen that.
I still whoop his ass.
10 pounds, 15 pounds. Wait, what?
We're starting a new fight league. You guys want to be the first the first one on it?
I wouldn't make enough money.
Show me the money.
Yeah.
We didn't get that.
Yeah, I did get that first round. Does that count?
He paid for your first set of beers. That counts beers as money.
Kind
of, right?
Yeah. I guess it's a trade deal. But. Mm-hmm. So once I came back, that's when we started, like, we'd wrestle around and it was a little more competitive. But in the gym, yeah, it was always, you know, you're training and you had that rivalry because I developed my game to beat him. You know, I mean, I do better against guys that are a little bit bigger than me than guys that are actually my size.
Right.
Because I spent the first, like, what, 8 years of my career basically focused on beating Dan until there was somebody that came around that we were training with that was like, all right, well, he's about my size, and I need to, you know, kind of focus on that. So there was that rivalry, but it was never malicious, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we never tried to hurt each other. I mean, I did break his toes a couple times.
Yes.
Kicked
me in the liver.
I punched him in a broken rib, which was not cool. That was stupid on my part. But yeah, it was always just kind of that. Trying to get better, trying to one up the other guy. And,
No. Where are you guys training? Like when you're getting two questions. Where are you training when MMA became an option, like an actual, like a realistic option? Like, oh my god, we can do this and maybe even make a few bucks off of it, or like this is what we want. Like, where are you guys training to that point where like people are starting to look at you and stuff like that?
Our first gym.
Yeah.
Our first gym. We went out.
Where was that?
That was Planet Jiu-Jitsu in East Hanover. It ended up closing down 2006. I think like October, late September, yeah, early October, something like that. Or mid-October. Like 3 weeks before I fought Frank Yeager.
Yeah.
So that would have been late October. But like as soon as we started fighting, we went out. And we both had our first fight. Dan went out, submitted his guy in like 2 minutes and 20 seconds or something like that.
That's it?
And I went out and...
It took a while.
good job taking your time, Dan.
Yeah. I went out and dominated a kid that everybody in like the Northeast knew from grappling. This kid had been competing with grown men. I mean, he just turned 18 like over the summer. This was his debut too, and... He was supposed to be like the next big thing, went out and just completely dominated him, beat him up, and yeah, it was a 2 4-minute round fight. So yeah. It wasn't exactly a long fight.
Who sees that? Who like, is there a promoter that comes or?
Well, we were fighting for a promotion.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it cost us money to fight.
Yeah, it
actually
cost us money.
Oh,
geez.
Yeah. We got paid, but we had to pay for our medicals. We had to pay for our licenses. Yeah, we had to pay. It cost me getting. We got paid $500. Yeah. To fight, $500, and to fight it cost me like almost $700 and some.
Wow.
$750.
So a net loss. A net,
yeah.
Net loss.
So it was actually our second
training.
Yeah. Yeah. And we fought for that, for the promoter. And then other promoters look, if you're doing well, other promotions will look at you and they'll make offers and stuff.
No. What I love a little bit about the UFC or MMA in general is, like, I love reading about, like, old baseball players and stuff like that. When, like, they would go in the off season, they go have to work, like sell insurance and cars and stuff like that, and then come and hit 40 home runs and stuff like that. MMA is kind of on, like, that cusp of a quote-unquote newer sport or whatever it is. Like, finally starting to get attention. So you guys are fighting, like, you got signed to the UFC eventually, which we'll get to in a second. But what are you doing in the meantime to supplement your income? Like, what do you – so you're training, which I imagine is a lot of hours, a lot of times a week. Yeah. What are you doing to, like, earn money or survive?
We were working with our father, doing construction. Every fighter, local fighter that I – there's no local fighters that just make a living off of fighting. Yeah. Everybody's got to kind of work, so it was the same thing for everybody. Everyone's kind of training, whether you have a job during the day or a job at night. You're training, around that job. And, we'd get off at work at, 3:30, 4 o'clock, and we'd head down to training, by 5:30. And wouldn't be back till like 11 or something like that. But, we did our first day. Took like two, three days off, and then came back, and we were training 6 days a week. Like, when we walked in the gym, it was like, we're going to, we want to fight. And the owner of the gym was like, all right, what'd you guys do? Wrestlers, this, that. And we talked to him. He's like, all right, give me like 2-3 years. I'll get you a fight.
Wow.
And we did that grappling tournament, and then, 3 months later, we had our first fight. Because, we put the time in the gym. That was it. Yeah. That was the thing. Mm-hmm. We just kept going. It was fun, and that was kind of the goal, was to fight.
I think what a lot of people don't realize, too, is today, if you're going to become an MMA fighter, you take an MMA. So, right, you get shin pads. You can't punch to the head of a downed opponent. There's some pretty specific rules to keep you safe, but you guys didn't get an amateur fight. You stepped right up into the big boy leagues with little gloves and head kicks right from the beginning. It was a different world back then, for sure.
It was a different world because it was GoPro or fight in the New York Underground, which is like, I don't know if it's still around, but it's just kind of like Fight Club.
It's still underground.
Yeah. It's like,
you go under a burrito place. It's basically, like, just say the code.
Basically,
Jameson, just, and they'll let you downstairs.
You order a pork burrito. All of a sudden, you're tonight's main event.
Con carne. there was like biting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it
Tyson
was like,
rules. I
yeah,
like
it was
it.
Like, all right. Well, do I want to go do that and get friggin' bit by somebody, or do I? Want to... I'm like, you know what? Let's go pro.
No, Pat, you, like, where do you fit into this? Did you know these guys a long, long time ago, or or you just like spots. Met them at the weird?
No,
like,
we
I was
fight
at
club.
That burrito place.
Yeah, I was in the burrito. I bit Jim.
I lost
hard.
At the burrito
I
place. I'm now his slave.
I'm the wrong thing.
He has bit me really hard.
Yes, I'm now their
broke
slave.
Skin. He broke skin.
Yeah, it was a retaliatory bite.
Yeah, it was.
Regardless. I did not bite first. I grew up with them. We've been friends since we were in, I guess, eighth grade. I moved to Sparta in eighth grade and known them since. Made some poor life decisions together. Terrible.
I really thought I'd amount to more. It all added up because you made it to the verbal shenanigans podcast.
That's everybody's life.
It's been a bumpy road to get here.
Now, you guys both... I, as far as what I read, you both got signed to UFC at the same day or the same contract, or how did that work?
It was kind of luck or fate or whatever. I had the opportunity a few months prior to that, that Joe Silva called our manager and we had just signed something with the IFL, but it was for this, they were going to like totally change the way they were doing things. And, they ended up breaching their contract and the UFC called and I was like, all right, well we can do this. The IFL, you know, broke their contract and all that stuff. And well, then the IFL decided that they wanted to play hardball with it. And basically, you know, they weren't screwing over anybody but me.
Right.
So they're like, well, you know, you can't fight. And, you know, we'll file an injunction and all this stuff. And
Fun.
Yeah. And, like, we would have wanted, but it's still, I'd have to go to court and all that crap. And it's like, so they're like, okay, well, you could fight this guy in 2 weeks. You know, we'll give you that fight. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. But I don't give a shit. You know, like, I'm fighting either way. So I almost had the opportunity to fight on short notice in the UFC in, that was what, 2008, like early 2008, March. Then I got kind of douched out of that. And so I fought for the IFL. And then the IFL ended up folding like 2 months later. The UFC bought out some of the contracts.
Okay.
They bought both of ours, and so yeah, that was probably the coolest thing. I mean,
it's pretty amazing. Like, you almost like you see two getting signed. It's almost like, you like whatever. If you're like a wrestling fan, it's like, oh, the Miller bro, like that. Both of you got signed together. Like it's pretty cool. Like it's pretty cool to like look back and be like, wow, we started together, we trained together, we did this together, yeah. And you fought together almost, yeah, in a way, you know.
We did. We fought on the same card in the UFC twice. We fought back to back once, and nobody, no other brothers have done that, and no other brothers will do that. I guarantee it, because it was fucking stressful. You know, it was crazy. But yeah, you know, like signing at the same time, sitting next to him like this, signing at the desk, you know, our old manager's desk, and that was something that we didn't think was going to happen. Like, we knew we'd get to the UFC. We knew we'd get, you know, we could make it in the sport. But that was kind of like one of those cherry on the top moments where you don't expect it's going to happen. It'd be ridiculous circumstances for it to happen, and
happened.
Ridiculous circumstances happened. Ended up happening.
Now, going back to IFL for a moment, it seemed like a kind of weird setup. Like, Dan, it says that you were a champion, but it says you were part of a team.
The IFL originally started as teams, and they, you know, it would have, I don't remember the exact, it was New York
Pitbulls, according
to
Wikipedia.
I was part of the New York Pitbulls. Only, we were training under a Henzo guy, and sorry. We were training under a Henzo guy. Yeah.
Shit.
So we were training under our old coach, Jamie Cruz, or he's still our coach now, Jamie Cruz, and he was a Henzo Gracie guy, and it was the New York Pitbulls, and Henzo was the coach. So one of the guys got hurt, and I stepped up, fought for the Pitbulls in the, I think it was the semifinals, yeah, of the of their tournament at the end of the year, and you know, that was kind of my first, you know, fight with them. And then my very next fight, I was fighting for the belt at 185 pounds. So
it's a weird setup. It
is weird.
Yeah.
At the time when they brought in individual champs, a couple years after they had started, and then they were kind of breaking away from the team thing at that point, when I fought for the title.
Well, I don't want to break away from the team thing, Scott. I would like to challenge you. I got a few names on here. I want you to identify if it is an IFL team or something else. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
The San Jose Razor Claws.
Totally a real team.
Are you saying it's an IFL or something else?
Something else.
I'm afraid it's an IFL team. Totally the San Jose Razor Claws. But we'll keep
Well, I was
going.
A big fan. I was a big fan.
The Buffalo Destroyers.
I'm going to say something else.
It was an Arena Football League team, Scotty. How about the Birmingham Fire?
That's like Mississippi Burning?
Possibly. And I didn't make
I'm
up
gonna
the
go
name.
I'm going to go IFL.
I'm afraid they're the World League of American Football, Scotty. No, absolutely not. How about the Seattle Tiger Sharks?
It's Seattle, so anything goes. Yeah. Yes.
Yes, yes, you are correct. A couple more. Omaha Vipers.
Omaha. No. No.
You are correct. The indoor soccer league team.
Natural,
how about
natural.
The Charlotte Rage?
Yes.
I'm afraid they're Arena Football League team. Pittsburgh Maulers.
Yes.
I'm afraid they're the United States Football League, Scotty. And finally, the South California Condors.
I really hope yes. I'm going to stick with you. Yeah,
obviously.
All right.
I wish I was a part of that team, Scotty, but...
I wish you were a part of another team, but...
I heard he plays for both teams.
He plays for
every team.
Team,
yeah. You buy anybody who says yes, I show up.
You buy him a drink, he's on every team.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I just want to read these names to you guys, okay? I even put it for once. I even prepared for you guys, which is, I've never prepared for anyone. But look, I wrote down some names: Lozon, Cerrone, mm-hmm. Edgar, Maynard, Diaz, Bisping, Maya, Sonnen. You guys have fought like what's considered the best or names, household names that you know. People who are even don't know a lot about the sport know some of these names. And you are right. You're both right there with them. Who like? Which do any of these fights stand out to you as like an achieving moment, or were they? Is every fight different? I just want to know how you approach things like that. Like maybe some of these names weren't even names at the time, obviously. But how do you guys approach fights? Even like I even put down like your early fights. Like, where, how do you suppress that excitement and like? Keep the focus and keep the eye on the prize of just winning the fight and not let it. Like, I can't sleep when I know that I got a comedy show the next day. I'm mm-hmm. thinking about like, man, this crazy joke's gonna go over terribly. They're gonna boo me. Like, I'm not getting my face beat in if I make a mistake. You know, like I'm not getting if I slip. I'm not making a roundhouse that's gonna take me out and you know hurt me. Where does the focus come from? Like, you know, is that from the training? Is that from something genetic? Is it from a little bit of both? Like, I just love to hear, like, a fighter's take on both of that, those topics.
I think it's a little bit of both, you know? I mean, like, we grew up physical, you know? Like, we were physical kids right. growing up. You know, we have an older brother, and we were... always doing stupid stuff.
Oh, there's another Miller.
Yeah, there is another Miller.
Yeah.
Wow, there's two other Millers.
Steve
Miller. We have a younger sister.
I love the band.
Yeah,
love the band.
He's a good
Miller
dude.
Lite.
Yeah. Yep. Amber Miller. Amber Nicole. Yeah. It's her hot cousin. but we grew up we grew up doing stupid things and even when we were working with our dad, it was always everything was always kind of that little bit of a competition, and you know our dad never stopped working because of an injury. For the most
sounds
part,
like my dad.
For the most part, you
my
know,
dad like, just had his second knee replaced. He's like, "Well, I got time off from work, so I got to redo the mm-hmm. house. You know, like redo all the bedrooms in the house." Like, yeah. "No, let it heal.
Yeah.
You know, let it heal."
So, I mean, it kind of got to the point where it's like, okay, well, you know, it's a fight. You know it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, now, granted, getting punched in the face doesn't hurt that bad. on the grand scheme of things.
Can you please test that on the co-host?
People that don't get punched, you know, they don't
think it's
going
to hurt so
bad.
Yeah,
they think it's
going to
hurt that bad, and it really doesn't. You know, one of the fights with one of the guys that you mentioned, you know, I got my nose broken in the first 30 seconds. And then I got punched in the nose another, like, 100 times after that. And that hurt, but not that bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't like...
Now, do you think that's because the adrenaline's through the roof?
No, it's not adrenaline.
Okay.
It's focus.
Okay.
Mm. Like, I could stub my toe walking out of here, and I'm not going to get an adrenaline rush from it. You know, it's
going to hurt. But you're going to curse a lot.
Yeah. I'm going to curse, and I'm going to run around, and I'm, you know, I might punch the wall. But you expect it to hurt.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like that's what happens. It's like, you know, a swimmer. If you're a swimmer, you can't be afraid of getting wet, you know, or getting a little water up your nose because it's going to happen. You know, you're going to deal with pain if you're in an MMA fight. That's just the way that it is. You just have to get kind of comfortable with that type of pain. So when you step onto the canvas, you focus in on it, and it's like, all right, well, if it hurts, it hurts, and it doesn't, and you deal with it, you know? I mean, when Dan fought Damian Maia, the second punch that he threw shattered his thumb.
Yeah.
It was in pieces. And after the first round, he's like, my thumb's dislocated. And then I look at it, it's like, all mangled. So I put my body between me and the commissioner, or the guy, you know, working for the commission, and I grab it, and I start to squeeze it, and I hear feel like, you know, like in my hand, and he goes, ah, fuck. And I'm like, oh, shit. And he's like, yeah, it's broken. And I'm like, yeah, I think it is. I'm like, well, if it hurts that bad, stop throwing it. If it doesn't hurt that bad, keep throwing it.
Yeah.
And he went, you know, he continues to fight 10 more minutes, throwing his right hand. After that, you just phase it out.
Yeah.
You know, and... You know, going into those fights with those guys, it's like, okay, well, you know, they're bad men, you know, but so are we. And right. You know, yeah. I mean, you step into the octagon, and it's anybody's night, you know, and we're prepared for it, but like we're also kind of bred for it a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
I agree. It's got to be. There's something there where like you guys or like you hear interviews with fighters and. I mean, Joe Rogan's done a brilliant job of bringing fighters into, you know, bringing them down. But you
not
hear
the coolest ones. Well, he brought the coolest ones on.
Well, not yet.
No.
Yeah. This is where they
once
all.
Once he finds out about us, I mean, he'll be like, damn it.
This is like AAA. This is like AAA. You guys are going to get the call next week.
It's Bellator.
But until then, you know, all these guys have this switch, and they say very similar things. Like, once you flip the switch, you're not thinking about the pain. You're thinking about the win. You're thinking about the, what can I do differently? Like, a lot of people said these injuries are, you know, you feel them after the fight or whatever it is. And, you know, it's an amazing attribute of the human body. Like, just when it's like that, you guys are, yes, you're voluntarily putting yourself in that fight or flight response where fight is the thing and your adrenaline pumps. But it's amazing that you could, like you said, break a thumb and just, you know, just how do I win the next round? Like, or what went wrong? Or, hey, Jim, is my thumb okay? Yeah. You know, like, it's amazing. Where if that, like you said, if that happened here or you fell in the bathroom or you when you're not ready for it, it's massive pain, you know?
Yeah.
But the question I had for you guys was... You've fought in the UFC. Both of you have fought some big fights. I mean, Jim, I want to get to a particular fight of yours, but you had fight of the year or whatever it was in 2012. I mean, I rewatched it this week just because I know we were talking about it. It's like something out of a movie, man. It's like a Rocky or a Gladiator. It's like just. And it goes with your personality, just sitting next to you, like and getting you like your vibe from different fights. It's go 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 back and forth. There's no like you guys don't seem to be like it, that fight with Joe Lozon was. It seems like you guys were just like who's gonna win this? You guys were at the. It seemed like you were at the same RPM level, like just hitting each other. Who's gonna win this? And where do you guys? like, when you are in a fight and you know you're going to win, what is the feeling? And when you're in a fight and you know you may lose, what are the thoughts? Like, okay, you're going into third or fifth, whatever it is. What are you trying to do? Like, what is the difference? If you're in a fight, are you just trying to hold the gas pedal at a certain point? Or if you're losing, do you have to hit the gas 100%?
There's no other option besides slamming on the gas pedal. I've fought like nearly 40 times, and that's pretty much all I know how to do.
Step on the gas.
Well, that's what I like watching your fight. It's like there's no third and fourth gear. It's first to sixth, it seems. Mm.
Well, I mean, like you kind of said it in there, like you're thinking about the win, and for me, it's never been about the win.
Okay,
it's. I mean, Dan kind of said it before talking about, I mean, we got into this for the competition. We weren't, you know, the first chapter, first couple chapters of our book are boring because we had we had everything we needed when we were kids and there wasn't any struggle. There was no abuse. There was no, no going hungry, no being cold at night.
It's like, funny you say that because, like, real quick, as a comedian, like, they always say you have to have, like, the worst life ever. Mm-hmm. Make fun. I'm like, oh, my dad was pretty good. My mom was a really sweet person.
Yeah. So you're gonna be a shitty comedian.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, I hope not.
The punchline was great, but you suck. Yeah, your mom loved you.
Yeah, your mom loved you. You know, like I don't even know where I was going.
You were saying we were talking about like the win and
It's like I mean, we got into it for the competition for that challenge, and. Every time that I step inside the octagon, it's for that challenge. It's not like I'm not going out and fighting guys because I don't like them. I'm fighting them because I want
that's
them.
Who you're facing.
Yeah, I want them to bring out the best in me. I want to perform at my absolute best, and I need the right dance partner for that. You know, if somebody comes out and they just kind of fiddle up, it's not going to be the best. You know, I'm not going to show off all my skills with that. I want somebody that's actually going to fight me. You know, so, like, you just, it's always been about trying your hardest. That's really it. You know, the one thing that our dad always said when we were wrestling is, go out, have fun, and try your best. That was it. Before every match, that was it. Right. It wasn't go out and win. You know, squeak one out, stall your way to a victory, you know, get banged with a couple stallings, give up one or two points.
Run to the outside of the octagon, run out the clock. Like,
I mean, like,
there's no kneeling in MMA.
Yeah, there's no kneeling, there's no injury timeouts, there's no blood time. You know, it's like, when we wrestled, you know, growing up as a kid wrestling, I was more pissed at myself if I went out and I tech fault somebody than if I lost a tough match. I'd rather go out and lose a tough match and not have that opportunity to pin somebody, but be in a back and forth battle and really, you know, kind of dig deep, than go out and like have opportunities to put somebody away and fail to do it. Because if I tech fall somebody, it means I put them to their back, and if I put them to their back, I better pin them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I won't accept anything else than that. You know, so when I fight guys, it's I expect my all, my everything. And I'd rather go out and have a, you know, knockdown, drag out war with somebody and lose than go out and just kind of try to coast and just squeak my way by in a victory. Or because the thing is particularly with the way that, you know, with the way that MMA works as opposed to wrestling, is you're going by three people that are sitting on the octagon side, and you might go out and think that you're winning while you're dancing around and avoiding the fight, and that other guy's name might get called at the end of the night. And there's absolutely nothing worse than hearing somebody else's name get called when you've got something left in the tank.
Well, I mean, that's kind of interesting. I mean, looking up your career, I looked at the fight with Pat Healy. You have the fight of the night. He chokes you out. And then a few months later, they tell you, oh, he had pot in his system, so it basically didn't exist. I mean, how do you go through, like, a roller coaster like that and just go on to the next item, for lack of a better term.
You know, I mean, that was a shitty fight to begin with. You know, it was just that was one of those times where not everything was there. You know, physically, like my right before that fight, 2 days before that fight, my wife got into a car accident on her way out to the hotel. She was 5 months pregnant with our daughter. Jeez. So it was Thursday night. I was supposed to be starting my weight cut around like 8 or 9 o'clock, and at 7 o'clock she, you know, she got into the accident. So we came back, picked her up. You know, she was all right. She broke her thumb and or dislocated her thumb and broke her pinky or something like that. But they, you know, we're still obviously worried about the baby. So we brought her to the hospital, and I spent four or five hours in the hospital with her that night. Went back to the hotel, got back at like 1 o'clock, cut weight, got like a couple hours of sleep, cut weight in the morning. And I, you know, there are a couple fights that I wish I had back, and the Healy one is... It's ranks right up there because I'm a better fighter than Pat Healy. You know, like I had him unconscious at the end of the first. He was unconscious. I woke him up by hitting him again. And every other fight that I've been in that I've had that I've seen that finish with somebody, that's when you get that adrenaline rush. That's when you get that like, oh shit, yeah, like this is it, man. Like I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. You know, like this is the end.
Right.
And there's that's where you get the rush, either seeing it in like actively while you're fighting, or I mean the best is absolutely seeing it when the other guy's sitting on a stool and you look across the cage at him and you see the fight just go and just fade away from him. It's like, I mean, it might make me a psychopath for saying this, no, but that is the best.
You're doing your job. That's
but yeah, you know, and I mean. I walked back to my corner after, like, having him done, having him finished, and I just felt my energies go, wah, and just bottom out. And it was just, you deal with it. And I went out, and he was able to gut through it and to beat me. But it's just one of those things. You deal with it.
Of course. But you brought up a point. I want to talk to both of you about weight cutting. I mean... It's part of the sport, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, we just saw this weekend Khabib couldn't fight, which sucks. It sucks for everyone, you know. Like, and the guy ends up in the hospital. For like one, what do you guys think about like as far as how far do you have to go to weight cut? And two, do you think there should be some like intermittent weight like between weight classes kind of fights? There should be more like. How do you guys go about that? And what's the most you guys have ever cut either for either one of you? Let's start
like
with Dan.
In a short period of time or?
Like for a fight. Okay, so you fought, Dan, you mostly you fought at 185.
Yeah, most of my fights at 185.
185. Yeah. So you walk around probably what, 200?
At the time, yeah. Right now, no.
I was like, see, I didn't make that joke. He did. He did.
So, at the time of fighting 185, I was 200.
Okay,
205 maybe.
All right. So, then when does the weight cut start? Like,
it usually starts, you know, 6 weeks prior, okay. 8 weeks okay. prior. All right. You know,
that's
kind of like
the diet. Like cut, I mean,
the cut. We're if I'm cutting weight,
cutting weight's water.
Weight. Yeah, water weight. You know, when you're cutting at the end. Yeah, that usually starts to, if you, you know, 5-6 days before.
And what's that? No water?
No. The way actually we do is a hyperhydration. So you actually drink a lot of water. Wow. You trick your body into thinking you're overhydrated and you sweat.
Okay.
So that last day, usually it'll make it a little easier. You know, I actually... For some reason, for me, when I would drink a lot of water, I'd actually lose, like, I would just, like, thin out, like, just kind of flush out. And,
really?
You know, I would lose 5-6 pounds by drinking a bunch of water. And then, yeah, late 85 is really easy.
Who drinks water and loses weight? It's amazing.
So then by the time I, you know, was actually cutting the day before, it was usually only, like, 6 to 8 pounds. But, you know, I've heard of guys, I actually cut at one point in time 18 pounds in 24 hours.
Wait. 18 pounds. What are you doing? You're on a treadmill all day long?
That point, we were doing, or we still do, baths. So you do hot baths.
Mm-hmm.
So you just lay in, basically, you know, take the temperature up to where it's, you know, it's hot. You know, you kind of basically sweating it. So you're, you know, laying in the water, you're sweating. And the thing about it is, it's the water.
18 pounds in a day?
See, that's my problem. I tried to jog. Obviously, I should have just took more baths. Yeah. I take too many showers.
I've been telling you to take a bath for a long time.
Well, yeah. You know, I'll get to it. I'm podcasting.
Now, 18 pounds. That's ridiculous.
It was not good. It was not planned. I was fighting at 170 pounds at the time, and it just didn't come off. It just was not, you know, I did everything the same time prior to it when I made 170s.
Now, how do you feel? You lost 18 pounds.
I feel like crap.
You gotta feel like garbage.
Yeah, I feel like crap.
No, like, I hear Rogan, like, he's like, you know, he talks about, like, Rumble, like, he was cutting so much weight, and he wasn't as strong and stuff like that. And
yeah.
Now he looks like a mass killer, you know. Like, did you feel that too?
Yeah, you know, learning from experiences, man. You know, it's a lot. The whole object is to go into the cage the way you feel in practice.
Right.
And usually, hopefully, you feel really good in practice. You know, and cutting weight, I've had rare occasions where it's like I feel good.
I after can't cutting even weight. Imagine. And, imagine. Losing 18 pounds in a day.
It was not. It wasn't fun at all, man. I was hurt, like really hurt.
Like, how do you throw bombs after that? Like, after having nothing left in the tank?
Yeah, I had a little bit of energy.
A little bit.
I think a half a round of energy. Yeah. You know, it wasn't good. I didn't perform well. Obviously, you know, I got finished off the first round, and it wasn't good. You know, I remember coming out of. I couldn't even keep anything down. I tried drinking right after weigh-ins, and I just started throwing up. I couldn't keep anything down. George St. Pierre's sitting two bleachers up from me. And he's like looking at me. I'm not sick. I'm not sick.
Bro, if you cannot punch me in the stomach, that'd be really cool, you know?
Man, it was...
Jim, how about you, like weight cutting? What do you walk around at, like usually?
It all depends. You know, I've had points in my career where I walked around in the mid to upper 180s.
Really?
And, you know, you talk about, like, Rumble, and, like, my sweet spot feels like when I'm about 185. Some of that weight drops around my hips. My butt gets a little dumpier.
You get a little hippie.
And I can sit down on stuff a little bit more. I have more power. I've stepped on a scale more times than probably, like, you know, 20 people do in their entire lives combined. Just between wrestling and MMA, and, you know, and it's like, you shouldn't. Right. You know, normal people shouldn't deal with it, but, like, I need to know these things, and I know that it's, like, 184. I hit 184, and it's like, yeah, I'm dumpy. You know, it's like, I can move bigger men. I'm still faster than them, but I feel stronger. My center gravity's a little.
You're shopping in the husky section.
Yeah. And my jeans fit a little nicer.
Talking trash. I'm in size 34. Bitches, watch out.
Yeah. But like when it comes to the cut, you know, even when I walk at that high, or when I had walked at that high, I would still diet down to below 170s before my weight cut. The highest I've ever been.
So you're down, like, say, like 170, 171. You got to cut to 155.
Yeah, so the heaviest I've ever been at the beginning of a fight week was 173. And I'll lose a couple pounds, you know, through the hydration and stuff like that, the hyperhydration. So usually it's like, I think the highest that I've had to cut is about 12 in that last, like, day. Because those first couple, they come off, you know, just going to the bathroom. And, you know, it's relative easy. But that last 24 hours... It sucks. And the thing is I had a bad cut in 2015, early 2015. I was in the bath for basically twice as long as I ever do to cut the same amount of weight. And then on fight day, the fight doctor, the ringside doctor's like, yeah, you look really dry. You know, go drink an extra bottle or two of water. And, you know, I felt like shit and I performed like shit. And I was like, you know what? I can't feel like that. Like, I can't feel like that on fight day. So I started to take my weight down over the last, you know, basically 2 years now. Well, 3 years now.
Yeah.
So I've had some, like, when I fought Thiago Alves.
Last month, right?
Thiago was in November. I showed up fight week on Tuesday at 162 pounds. And the fight was technically yeah. at 163 pounds. So, like, I could have made weight without, you know, that day on Tuesday.
Right.
Before the weigh-ins. And you know, that was, I mean, it was a breeze. Like,
yeah.
I
didn't get to
I could have, you know, close. I made weight, but then I had to gain weight for the fight to be on. But, like, I just tried. It's like, you know, I'm only 5'8", so going up to 170s it's going to be difficult dealing with reach, because there's some big men at, although they're basically the same height. I've fought plenty of guys that are 6'1", 6'2", at 155. So you kind of have to find that trade-off.
Now, what do you think about the, like, what do you think the solution to that is, like, as far as the weight cutting and, like, the... I mean, that's insane. Like, I don't understand the weight cutting and then feeling like shit. Yeah. I want to see you fight you at your best. You know, like, the two of you, I want to see at your most energetic, feeling the best, energy, you know, because I would assume it's a better fight and a more fair competition. Like, what do you think that's going to change at all, or what's the solution to that?
The only way that you're going to have that, the only way that you're going to have two guys that show up that aren't cutting any weight, you know, neither one of them are doing anything to manipulate their weight and bring their weight down, is to get rid of weight classes.
Completely
get rid of weight classes. And it takes away champions, because you can't have a champion if you don't have a weight class. But you're always, guys are going to fight at the weight that they walk around at.
Right.
And you're going to have, okay, well, you know, I'll fight guys that walk around at, you know, if I walk around at 185, I'll fight guys that walk around at 200 pounds. Like, okay, let's do it. And you just see who's the better fighter. And
no, like, I understand your, like, concept on that, but that'll never happen.
It would never work.
So what would be, like, a realistic solution for you guys? Like,
there is none.
Yeah, there isn't. People say add weight class. It doesn't make sense, because now you're just making it closer for us to cut.
Yeah.
Because now if there's a 180 weight class and I was 185, I could go another 5 pounds.
Right. Yeah. Now, what about, like, if, like say, weigh-in was tomorrow and then you had a week till a fight? Would it just be too insane, like, what you can do to yourself in a week? Like,
guys can gain a lot of weight, but... What I mean,
like, let's say, like, it was me versus you, and we weighed in today, and the fight was on Friday or something like that, or even, like, more time between the fight. Would that help, like, get you hydrated and make you feel better?
More time. That's probably the only thing that would help, is more time.
Like, most of the UFCs are on Saturday, right? So, if weigh-in was Monday or Tuesday, like, and then we're going to fight...
Because, at that point, you still have to make the weight, but you're going to balance out. Because a lot of times, too, what can happen is guys make the weight, and then they completely go overboard. And then they fight higher than what they walk around at.
Right.
And then that's even worse. Like, I'd rather fight a little bit dehydrated, or, you know, a little bit, like, lighter than you normally do, than carrying around 2 pounds of water in your gut. You know, like, you're gonna feel it, and you're gonna gas out quick. Putting in more weight classes, you're just kind of watering it down.
Right.
The thing is like, you know, people say, oh, well, weigh guys in the off season. Listen, man, there is no off season.
Yeah.
So it's like there's always the off season is that month after your fight. Like,
yeah, I mean,
you know, and. And there's always something going on. You get injured. I mean, shit, I put on weight. When my wife gets pregnant, I put on weight. You know, like, it's just the way that it happens. Like, she would get cravings, I would eat more food, and then I'm drinking all the wine. You know, so I would always put on more weight. But there really isn't any way that I can see, like,
the only way I can see as a casual fan is just put, like I said, a couple, even like just a little bit more time between weigh-ins and fights.
Yeah, I mean, that might work, but like, also, like, if you went to like hydration tests and all this stuff, because the thing is, you have to look at it as the promotion needs the fight to go on,
right?
Like, I mean, in November we went through it with the, if the guy doesn't make weight, they don't care.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not on them. As long as the fight happens, they don't care. If me as the other fighter say, you know what, he came in at, you know, 8 pounds overweight, I don't want to do that, then I'm the guy that looks bad.
Right.
Yeah. So it you're never gonna get like a ton of help from the promotions because they just want the fights to happen.
Now, have you guys been, I hear the Asada, like, the crazy piss test. Have you guys gotten all that? Are they allowed to just show up whenever, or how's that work?
They come to the house.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they come to the house.
Nothing crazy.
Mm. You know what sucks is they always come at, like, I mean, the first time they came at, like, 6 o'clock. And I was like, listen, man, you just woke up my kids. Uh-huh. I'm like...
There's going to be a separate fight. Yeah, you smoke, like, the kids up.
Nope. You know, they'll come in the morning, and unfortunately, the one time I had gotten up, like, 45 minutes before that, I just woke up to go to the bathroom, and it's like, you guys show up, and I don't have to piss. You know?
Damn it.
Because, like, if you have to go to the bathroom, then boom, you bang it out, they get out of there, and you're done with. Yeah, it's not too bad. I shouldn't say this, but I get lucky because I don't necessarily, I'm not good at keeping up to date with my whereabouts. Because it's like,
you're at Tap House 15. Yeah, it's March.
I'm either at my house or I'm at the gym. So when I fill my thing out, I say, I'm at the gym between, you know, 9 and 3, and I'm at my house every other waking hour.
Right.
So since I don't update it that much, I forget to update it. So then it's like, I'll be out of town. I was like, oh, shit. Like,
well, that's happened a lot in the NFL lately. A lot of guys got 4-game suspensions just because they're like, I couldn't take the test.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. So you guys, I have it written down here is, you live in this fighting life where, you know, you build so much into the fight, the planning the fight, the training the fight, the always being involved in what's going to happen in that maximum 15 minutes, maximum 25 minutes, whatever it is. How do you, like, adjust that switch? Like, you have a family. You guys both have families, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you adjust that, like, turn the switch off? Like, I'm not MMA fighter. I'm, like, cuddly dad. I'm fun. I'm, like... It's an intense thing to go in a ring and fight someone. Like, do you find it hard to, like, turn the switch on and calm down? Like, between, or it's like, are you able to departmentalize that completely? Like, here's fighting, here's my family. Do you find any things, like, where you can't, like do you find you need it? Like, is it an addiction kind of thing, or I don't know.
It was always easy for me to just just switch it off.
Like, okay.
You got so much just out at practice. I mean, you just drain yourself. A lot of our practices used to be would just be like every day was just intense,
right?
And draining. So the last thing I wanted to do at home was do anything related to fighting.
It's got to feel good. Yeah. It's got to feel good coming home, right?
Yeah. Like, and even watching, sometimes it was like you're around it every day, all day. It's just like, sometimes, like, fights, it's just like, I don't even want to watch fights. I don't want to watch them because it's like,
I want to watch
that's
Frozen.
All I've done. Yeah.
Let it go.
Let it go.
No, anything like that.
So, I put on White Chicks, I'll be happy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You know, yeah, like, for me, like, I think one of the things that I'm really good at is focusing.
Right.
And focusing on what is in front of me. So if I'm on the mat, I'm not thinking about, you know, and I've had plenty of shit going on. And only once or twice have I had things that were going on outside of MMA that affected me on the mats, you know, in training. So when I'm at home, I'm focused on what's at home, and whether that's cutting the lawn or playing with the kids or what, you know, or making dinner, it's, you know, like Dan said, it'd be really exhausting to be focusing on it. Now, laying down to go to bed at night sometimes, it's like,
yeah,
that's when there's nothing else. There's nothing else.
Can't shut off the brain.
Yeah, you start thinking about it.
I just posted like a stupid ass joke today. Like, I go to bed. It's like, oh, I got work at 6 in the morning. It's like, oh, let's watch an episode of blah, 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 and I fall asleep. It's like, well, you've now watched 3. Like, what do you want to do now? Like, all right, let's turn the TV off. Let's, wow, it's really dark in here. And I was thinking, and then, like, suddenly a thought would be like, what was the name of that guy in 3rd grade that we play with? Like, yeah. And then the dog's like, I got to go out. You know, like,
remember that time you did something stupid that was embarrassing?
Yeah. Yeah, you're a real piece of shit, Scott. You're awful. No, go to bed. Like, it's like, no, my mind, like, doesn't stop. Like, I don't know how you guys, like, especially, like, leading up to a fight, like, leading into the couple days before, like, how do you, like, get that rest and relaxation? Like, your family probably helps at that point where, like, you have a distraction from the fight.
Yeah. I just, you know, it's usually going to bed, man. Going to bed and laying down and being like, and that's always like, well, I got butterflies. Yeah. Yeah. But, like, you know, just try to think of other things and keep, you know, keep your mind off of it. Because it would eat you up if you just, it's all you thought about.
I mean, it's kind of interesting you talk about you don't want to, like, look back at your old fights as you, like, helping out new kids and all getting into MMA. Do you see that you have to teach them concentration? Is their first thoughts always, nah, I want to come in here and punch a kid because I know what I'm doing and I'll get it right. Don't worry. I'm a prodigy.
Luckily, we've got a really good group.
Yeah.
You know, and we got a good group of fighters and students, and we have a good group of guys that are coaching and, you know, and help us through that. So, everybody's got their own style, and like Dan and I aren't the best coaches, you know. I mean, like, what has made me personally successful in MMA? I don't think I can teach.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, yeah, just don't give a shit and lean
go
forward,
for
you know.
Go for
you
stuff.
Know? just. Do stupid things,
right?
You know, anything that that's anything, my motto is, for the yeah, podcast. Anything that somebody said, don't do that. Do it in a fight. So, like, it's you just gotta kind of let people develop their own game. And granted, you want them to do well and to be their best. And when there is guidance, when I have experience, because the two of us, we have how many freaking fights at this point, like 75 fights between the two of us or something like that.
Basically, yep.
There is a lot of information that we can give people, but at the same time, everything that's happened up until that point for them is completely different. Mm. You know, so you just have to kind of let them feel it out on their own and let them do it themselves, you know, and you hope for the best, but I'm not in it, and I'm not coaching, and I didn't open a gym to make a bunch of, you know, second generation Jim Millers. You know, like I want to help people accomplish their own things and you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's switch it up a little bit. I put out a thing for fan questions, people who want to ask questions. The first one was to you, Jim. You fought Nate Diaz, okay? Yeah, he then fought on a card with, obviously, Conor McGregor. Now, the question was, who would you rather fight and who you think's the better fighter, Diaz or McGregor? Now, I look at Nate Diaz, and he could be perfect in the cast of The Walking Dead because that guy
seems like he doesn't get hurt. Like, he just doesn't stop moving forward. Like, he frightens me.
When it comes to I'd rather fight McGregor.
Rather fight McGregor. Okay. Well, you fought Diaz, too. So.
Yeah. You know, and I know that that night that I had the game plan to beat Diaz, you know. Sometimes things don't go your way. But I if I put McGregor on the ground, I'm submitting him.
Got it.
You know? So, and I will put McGregor on the ground. But
I love it.
What was the other part of that question?
Who would you fight, and who do you think the better fighter
who
I think
is? The better fighter is. I think that they're both obviously Conor is a very very good. He's a phenomenal athlete. And I think that what makes Nate, you know, that ability to just, he's another guy. He doesn't give a shit about getting punched in the face. I don't know if Conor has that. Like, I don't think Conor's more of a very talented athlete of a fighter than a fighter of a fighter. You know, like, he's not going to, you know, grind or deal with some of the shittier things that can happen in a fight.
No. Oh.
But they're both super talented, man. They're both. I don't know if I want to see three yet, though.
Yeah,
man. Yeah.
I agree. Second question was for both of you. It was: do you have any fears of long-term effects given the heightened awareness of head injuries? Do either of you have any? Any fear, or have you known anyone with head injuries, or on a second, like, to tag along on that question, like as I was telling you guys before, I coach high school sports. Is there any like thing in place in MMA to, like, with people getting into the sport, to like some kind of protection? Whereas I'm sure 15 years ago when you guys were getting in, it was like, get hit in the face, who cares, you know, like, eat it.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I don't think there's anything right now. I mean, just train smarter, basically. Okay. You don't have to not to spar every day. I think a lot of people are learning that now.
Well, I mean, I think even I heard an interview with Cerrone. I think he was saying he doesn't even spar before. Like, he's, like, limiting his sparring almost to nothing before fights.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically one thing. But
right.
It was always something not – that I was scared of, but it was a thought.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't mind having a intelligent conversation, as I completely mess up that word.
I would love an intelligent.
Yeah. I would love to have, still be able to have a conversation with my kids. That's the thing, is like, I don't want to go out and be like, some of the old boxers are just, they can't talk.
I know. I met one day, like, recently at a deli.
Yeah.
It was bad news.
That was something that, it was always on my mind. It was like, but, I don't think the punishment that we take, it's a lot. I think of not fighting 15 rounds, makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And just that repeated, hitting through the head, but...
Jim?
I think one of the things that, like, I definitely, I thought about it, and honestly, I've got Lyme disease. Dan actually has Lyme disease as well.
Yeah.
I had it was kicking my butt in 2015, and I thought a lot of the symptoms that I was having was from being a professional fighter.
Oh, really?
Because they're basically the same exact things.
I just saw a map yesterday of the predicted Lyme disease in the Northeast.
He just said,
I take my dog out almost every day in the woods, and it's like, he got something this last year. Yeah.
It's bad.
It sucks, but it's like, I'm not going to stop doing it. Like, I'm going to go outside. Yeah. Otherwise, I'll die.
Yeah. You know? My dad, he had Lyme disease. They didn't diagnose it. He was close to suicidal. Uh-huh. That's how bad he got at the point.
Yeah, like, because I started to, I was saying a completely wrong word than I meant to
really?
Say. Like, I'd have, slipping. You'd have something, a conversation, a line of thought that you're on. And then you just say something completely bizarre, and you catch yourself. I'm like, man, is this from getting hit in the head? I was TKO'd once. It's like, I've never been knocked off my feet in the room. I've never, you know, like, I mean, shit, I've barely been knocked down in the cage. And
I've drank a lot of homemade wine.
Yeah,
but
that's true. You know? But like, you think about it, it's like, man. So, you know, you do think about it and you worry about it. But like, we being kind of making our careers in these smaller gyms, it definitely helped us when it comes to that. Because a lot of it, it's not so much the fight, it's the training. And we had a very good team around us. And we do today, but like when we were coming up, we were the Hammers, you know. Yeah. It was Dan and I and some other guys that were.
Is that where the logo comes from? On
no,
oh,
our father grew up, you know. I mean,
now I feel like was that with the logo? You guys were the Hammers?
Nah,
we weren't the Hammers, guy.
Yeah. Nah.
We love that song, Too Legit to Quit.
Good guess.
We just brought it in.
Yeah. But, you know, like we were, you know, it was, you were able to do round after round after round with guys because you were a better athlete and more technical than them. You know, and like, it's not that we were beating the shit out of people except for like one or two occasions.
Yeah.
But when we were assholes, but, but it was a little bit.
That's a short period of time.
Yeah, it was safer, you know, for us being, you know, kind of the big fish in the little pond. We still got the push,
right?
Mm-hmm. But we didn't take the trot. Like, you know, you look at some of these other gyms, the ATT, Miletich, AKA. I mean, they're
knocking each other out.
Yeah, they knock each other out
on a daily basis,
and that's what they're there for. Like, even when we had a team of, I mean, at one point, I think there were six guys that were actively fighting in the UFC. Yeah. Nobody's there to knock each other out.
No.
Like, we were there to make each other better.
Yeah.
And, I mean, granted, occasionally guys got knocked out and, you know, injuries happen, but it's not like, you're not like clipping somebody and wobbling them and then finishing them.
Yeah. Right, right.
And
right,
those
right.
other guys will do that. Like, you fucking, you hit somebody and you see their eyes go, it kind of open up a little bit. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. All right, you're good.
Yeah,
go have a
steady,
seat.
Steady.
You know? Yeah, I think you're good. You know, and it was kind of a friendlier atmosphere. So, like, we kind of lucked out, I guess, with some of that. And,
yeah.
And we have really hard heads and small brains.
All right, we are back with the Miller brothers. So I only want to ask you guys a couple more things about fighting. Now, Jim and Dan, I saw you guys, like, I watched, leading up this week, I watched a lot of your older fights. Jim, particularly, I watched UFC 155, which, like we said before, got the fight of the year in 2012. Dan, I watched some of your fights. Now, like, back in the day, before the Reebok deal, I wanted to ask you guys, as a fighter, before the Reebok deal, obviously, it sucked out all the advertising on your shorts and all that stuff. I wanted to ask you guys, was that a real big hit to like, fighters like you guys, or was it more of a hit to, like guys who were the big main events, so, or was it a hit to everyone?
I want everybody. Yeah.
Everybody.
The way that sponsorship was going, and it really, using the word sponsorship is kind of, it doesn't really work because it was always a transactional deal. There were a couple companies that would sponsor fighters and pay them to live the lifestyle of a fighter so that they can perform better inside the octagon.
Right.
Most of it was, you only get paid to wear my patch inside the cage. Mm. So that's not sponsorship. That's just paying
product placement.
It's advertising. So, you know, I had maybe two, well, three technically, didn't get paid by the one, but three sponsors.
Okay.
Over the course of my career. So it's like, you know, you get a monthly check or whatever, and there you go. And it's awesome because you might get a little bit less money, but at least it's steady money. And if you don't fight, if you get hurt or whatever, and you have 8 months between fights.
A little padding.
Yeah, you've got something coming in where most of it is just around wearing.
Saying if we flash back 4 years and we were like, Jim, I want you to wear the Verbal Shenanigans patch on your shorts, we could have done that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were that third advertising.
We missed out.
I would have given you crotch.
Oh, yeah.
Crotch.
That's usually what we get.
That's what we always look for.
Yeah. No, that's usually what we always get.
Yeah.
Yeah. That or ass, if you want.
I'm an ass man. Yeah. but yeah, so it did give you like some padding. Because like back in the day, like the common man will watch back. Oh my god, it's like they're like human NASCARs.
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. No. Why did they step into it just to make them a bazillion dollars for the company and take that out of the equation? Or
what? When we came into the UFC in 2008, it was the Wild West and it was awesome. Now as you know. Debuting fighters, we didn't make really anything.
Right.
You know, you made a couple grand in sponsors, which was nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But compared to like main eventers and co-main eventers, we're making six figures. Then you had Affliction.
Right.
Affliction
made
mega bucks. All of a sudden, you know, they sponsored GSP and Couture and Liddell and like all these huge fighters. And then they exploded, and then they started their own fight promotion. Mm. So then the UFC got pissed, and they're like, all right, well, you know what? If you're gonna use our airtime to display your product or your logo, you're going to have to pay. So then the tax came in. So then you had the tax for a couple years, and you always had to jump around like, well, is it competing with the corporate sponsor or whatever and all this bogus shit, but it was still good. You could still make good money. You still had, the opportunity to go between different companies, and that's really what it comes down to, is that bargaining chip.
And exactly, you could sell yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, like we never did it well. I don't think we did it. Our management at the time, it was all about. If they could get $50 more, they got $50 more. So we never created a relationship.
Well, I mean, even like just talking to you right before we took this little break, like even if that was still
don't
around.
Don't bring that stuff up. We were talking about some really weird things. Really
weird. I'm not bringing that stuff up. I'm not bringing.
That's Verbal Shenanigans After Hours.
That's episode two. but we were talking about, like, even if like that was still around, you guys. You probably could get like even some kind of outdoor sponsorship, which we'll get to in like 2 seconds, but something on your shorts and stuff like that. And I feel like that sucks for like the undercard or lower card kind of guys. It's pretty much been eviscerated,
And the thing is, like now the way it is, it's all about like how many fights you have in the UFC. So the only way that I'm going to make more money from the Reebok deal is if I fight for a title. If I fight for a title, I'll make a little more. If I become a champion, I'll make a little more than that. You know, I'm plateaued.
Right.
So that the idea of that kind of sucks. Like, you know, you could grow your brand and be the biggest thing in the world, but still not get that title shot. You know, like, oh my God, Jim Miller's on Verbal Shenanigans. Like, next thing you know, I'm on Ellen and shit.
Well, that's usually a lot of career.
That's how it goes, right? Yeah. She steals all of our guests. We get really mad.
Or like
we
Oprah.
Always have our lawyers talking to her people.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I'm still not going to make any more money by wearing my Reebok shorts.
It's true. It's true. Mm. Which brings me to a direct question. Like, do you think the fight game has gone where it's, people are getting shots, obviously, like CM Punk and think people are getting the big time money. Do you think the fight game has gone more where I got to make a name for, like, all right, here's a guy like Garbrandt who I think is amazingly talented and he's jitterbugging in the ring. Like, is that his attempt to get the cameras on him and the focus on him and the Twitter feeds on him and stuff like that? Or do you think, like, a guy like you, who from what I see from his fights is no, you know, like straight up business, just
no
fighting
nonsense.
Punches, blah, 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 you know, man's man. But then you got these guys. Are people searching for, are they trying to, like, look for a way, like, yeah, I'm a fighter, but I could trash talk with the best of them, but I could do a moonwalk when I'm, like, do you see that happening, or?
MMA has never, it's never been branded to be mainstream. It's been said that it's been branded as mainstream.
That's a good point.
But it's never been, because mainstream is just normal, regular people, you know? And, yeah, granted, we might be a little bit weird, but...
Oh, you are.
Everybody's weird.
What you said to me before,
yeah,
real weird.
Yeah, it was weird. I was a little aggressive, but... but, like, MMA has still never been branded as just mainstream, normal people that are fighters.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's always those fighters that are just walking that edge. And the issue with that is that, I mean, if you're walking the edge, sooner or later, you're going to step over it. Mm. Like, and you're going to fall off and do something stupid, John Jones. You know, like, and it's like, but that's still what it's always been. And, you know, like, guys get, oh, well, they did this, they did that. Oh, my gosh. Like, they're acting like children. But it's getting pushed. It's on, you know, every promotion's website or every news, every media source's website.
It's this weird paradox between, like, the most talented fighters or, like, did I do some kind of media stunt? And you know, like,
and as a,
that's got to frustrate you guys immensely.
It doesn't frustrate me. No. It doesn't frustrate me. But as a parent, it's like, there are only a handful of fighters that I would push my kids toward as a role model.
I read a quote from you. It's funny you say that. I read a quote from you about Joe mm-hmm. Lozon, right? That you said something about, like, I would want my kids to
be. He's a genuine good dude. Like, kid's got a degree. He fights because he loves it. He's got two gyms, you know, I think he still does computer work and stuff like that, and does that type of work. And he's just a good guy. And he's also tough as nails in fights, and he doesn't do stupid shit to to make his, you know, like, Twitter explode or
Well, it's funny because
we shot a bow and arrow off the back. I shot a bow and arrow off the back of a dirt bike. Like, we're not, like,
on the way here.
Yeah,
right?
We're not. Yeah, we're not. You know, like,
so I psyched myself up for podcasts.
You guys hungry?
Didn't I do stupid things because we find stupid things fun?
Yeah. Well, who doesn't?
We're not doing it at the expense of other people. You know, like, we're not. You know. Coming out to a restaurant and acting like assholes, and, like, how many other fighters get into bar fights and stuff like that? It's like, dude, I get paid. Now, I'd like to get paid more money, but I still get paid a lot of money mm-hmm. to fight. So the last thing that I'm going to do is fight for free. You know.
Well, here's the thing I wanted to ask you: like, you're in a sport, like, it's this weird conundrum, right? It's sometimes it's way cooler than, like, the MLB and stuff like that, because your individuality sells you.
Yeah,
you're Jim Miller, you're Dan Miller, you're. I think what's cool about you is, like, that yourself and you're humble and you can put it out there in the world. But then sometimes these guys' individuality gets them in trouble. You know, like, it's like, oh well, blah blah blah. John Jones is doing this tonight, so it's like. We're like, you're not a team per se. Of course, you have a team behind you, but you're not the Washington Redskins today. Did this and they have to do this. It's Jim Miller effed up, or Jim Miller did something great today. You know, like, so that's what's kind of cool about the sport. But I guess I could also see the the trap behind it too. It's like these guys are selling themselves on like how outrageous they can be, but in the end, I think it's kind of cool to like I want to meet you. I want to meet you. Like it, I don't have to go through 900 agents and the rest of the offensive line to get to the quarterback. You know, it's like
yeah.
You guys are just in the end, you're just normal dudes.
That's not true. So I'm just here to fact check that 100%.
It'd be great if we ended it right there and then did part two.
Oh, you didn't do that? Stop.
Which leads me to let's talk a little before we get at it. Let's talk a little bit about your guys' personal life, Jim. I follow you on Instagram, and I have you're always doing bow and arrows, and you guys are doing wine making, beer making, which is right up my alley, by the way. How do you balance that? Dan, you too. Obviously it's a common interest, but you got the bow and arrows, you got the hunting, how do you balance fighting, training, family, shooting shit, you know, obviously like shooting shit off of the back of a dirt bike or whatever the hell you guys said. How do you balance that?
It's not easy. I don't think we obviously later in our you know lives and careers it's you know it's a little easier, a little more maybe even a little more time. But
right.
I mean him, he's been fighting a lot recently, and
oh yeah,
it's part of the reason why we haven't been brewing as much as we'd like. You know, it's not easy just to
put it on me.
No. Yeah.
Good job, man.
All because of Jim. There's a lot less Miller Lite out there.
So it's just it's a lot. It's a lot to try to do everything, and
right.
But as soon as we get time, it's you know like just you know.
You guys been brewing things for a while?
Yeah, I had started when I was like below, you know, under 21, but whatever. And it was a long time ago.
When you were in jail, yeah, fermenting, fruit.
So, I mean, yeah, I've been brewing beer for a while.
Yeah, me too.
When did we start?
2010, 2009.
Yeah, something like that. We started brewing together, doing it for a while.
Yeah, what's your style of choice?
Just more like American ales, man. We like you know
like amber,
yeah, amber,
red,
yeah, amber, red, brown,
pale. That's a lot of pretty stuff we.
Oktoberfest, we have a mean Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
The alt beer is the one that we brewed it like a couple times, and that's the one that we've had to dump out two batches. Right?
Yeah.
It sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Comes out really good when you hit it.
Yeah, when it comes out.
Comes out really good the next morning.
We had some weird shit happen to it. Like the one time we just couldn't get it through. Like out of the kettle, we had it in the boil kettle, and it was just the hops were just clogging.
Dude, you gotta do the old sanitize the poker and pull it out.
Oh man, we tried.
We tried everything.
We did everything.
Stop.
Everything. Yeah.
You didn't do everything.
We did everything.
Everything. Not obviously not enough.
No, we got it out there.
And blew back in to blow it out. Like, I think that's why it ended up going sour.
Guys, it's on sale tonight at Tap House 15. $2 pint.
Tastes like toe jam.
MMA saliva now on tap.
Basically the American ales and stuff like that. We brew a lot of. We've done some IPAs and
IPAs are the best to me. I love stouts, but I love brewing IPAs because even if I mess up, they always seem okay. Yeah. Like they always seem alright. Stouts I've messed up a bunch of times.
We have a brown ale, and it's kind of based off of Moosestrel.
Yep.
It's a little bit a bit roastier than Moosestrel, but I took the recipe and I altered it to make it into more of like an American stout. And we had a pig roast like 2.5 years ago now.
Yeah.
Two years ago. Whatever the fuck it was. I don't even know. But
we had a pig roast.
We had a pig roast one time. Yeah. And so I bumped it up to make it a stout. So it was like a 6.5 8%, something like that. And then we ran a little bit through coffee. Mm. And it was
the best?
Fucking spectacular.
Yeah, it was pretty right? good.
We also we make this pale ale that I've made both times when we've had the pig roasts. I wanted a recipe that was like light but slightly like complex with the hops. So it's like a really heavily hopped Citra pale ale. Mm-hmm. So you get that like the tropical.
You're talking my language.
Tropical mm. fruit.
Yep.
Sounding good.
And like. It's only like a 3.7.
It's fine.
You know? Session. And that's exactly it. It's like I wanted something you could just drink the shit out of.
Yeah. You want something we could sit in the garage and talk about MMA for a while.
And but like the IBUs on it are ridiculous. Like it when it first comes out, like it freaking melts your tongue off. And it's amazing because it's not supposed to be like that. But it goes so well with the pig and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
And, I love beer. If you can't notice, I fucking love beer.
We could do a whole other beer podcast one day.
Easily.
But you guys are big hunters, both of you, right?
Yeah.
We try.
Well, you know.
That's why it's called hunting.
Yeah, exactly. So did you guys grow up hunting? Are you arrow guys, gun guys, both? What is it?
We really didn't grow up hunting. We grew up listening to stories.
We grew up watching Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah, yeah.
we hunted apples.
Our dad grew up. He grew up hunting.
Okay,
and he ran dogs, ran pointers and beagles. And you know was a deer hunter.
Oh, nice! So he did the whole thing.
He used to do field trials and stuff like that with his dogs.
My
and,
dog's a half beagle, but half English bulldog. Mm-hmm. The bulldog part, like he ain't hunting much. Yeah. He's hunting counties.
He's staying in the truck, and I'll say, "Go get it, Daddy."
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, I'll eat it. That's about it.
but we the house that we grew up in for the first like half of our lives, basically, or our adolescent lives, was basically surrounded by like. State and town land. So we were climbing trees and swinging on vines. We like grew up outside.
That's the best best way to be.
You know, and we had that's the thing is we
real
had
real children.
Yeah, we had granted it wasn't our property, but we had woods to
real
mess
children.
Around
yeah. Exactly.
And you know, to stay out of trouble and all that stuff. So we were always in the woods and messing around and we wanted to do it and finally when our older brother went to college he like came back from college on like a break or something like that. And he's like, all right, we got to get our licenses. So we were teenagers at this point. And then we got our licenses, you know, went through the hunter's education. And so we were in our teens when we started hunting, but kind of grew up in the outdoors still.
You ever eat bear?
Yes.
Yes.
What's that like?
We've only had New Jersey bear, and New Jersey bear is delicious. It's kind of yeah.
What states suck? So we can
pretty much
trash
everywhere else.
It.
Pretty much everywhere else. From what I understand, you know, like the northern New Jersey, southeastern New York, and the corner of PA there, northeastern PA, the bears in that little vicinity here, they haven't really had the need to hibernate too much. There's so much browse. There's so much food for them. Other than the ones that are getting into the garbage and shit like that, we're talking about like the ones that are actually kind of staying.
When I lived in Rockaway, pretty much living in my backyard, every morning, like, hey guys,
they just get such a good variety of food and quality food that they just taste really good, and it kind of reminded me of like. Almost like bison.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, it's very tough.
If you just, like, throw out a bunch of things that you love, like the scraps of all the food you love, and the bear is eating your garbage.
Well, you still want
it's like, going to be, like, the perfect bear.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily, because I love sausage, and I love buffalo wings, and I love beer.
Honey, what you know, are you like, doing? It's going to be great. Don't worry
like,
about it.
If you fed him, like, you know, blueberries and like...
I know. Birch, I know.
Birch buds and stuff like that.
Then it's good. Yeah. But I do a little bit on the show because I'm like very... I love bears. Like bears, like my one of my favorite animals. So I do a bit on the
show. We eat them?
No, no. Actually, I actually next very week. Much support hunters. I think they get. I don't support hunters who are just like, I want to put a bear's head on the wall. But if you're gonna eat the meat, that's like the best thing ever. I love people who are like against something, but yet they'll eat like. McDonald's nugget, like, yeah, a processed chicken that's been through a million machines and whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm a big bear guy, and I do a segment on the show called Bear News, and I want to end the night with three bear stories and just get your guys' comments on, on the different things. But here's Bear News.
Are there any twink news? Is that a no?
He's playing his theme song. Right
oh, sorry. Yeah. I got a theme song in my head. Yeah. What was the question? Are there any twink news?
I forget it happened.
All right. Yep. Yeah. I can't forget it. All right. The first story, guys. Bear attacks a car in a Chinese zoo famous for a tiger mauling. So the zoo was once a zoo, but it got famous for a tiger mauling, but now the bears attacked a car. All right, so I'm going to read the story a little bit to you. An open car window almost led to a fatal consequence at an already controversial controversial zoo in China. In a video filmed by a fellow zoo visitor and posted on a blogging site, a group of Asiatic black bears can be seen rushing to an open car window. Witnesses say a child was in the back seat at the time. One bear momentarily pokes his head into the back of the car before the zoo via loudspeaker instructs the car to roll away. Before the car was attacked by the bears, there was an open window and they were feeding the black bear, she posted. Park officials later confirmed her allegations. Online photos show large cats jumping through hoops of fire and balancing. That was the zoo. Bubble. Sorry. That was not going on at the bears. But the park had a strict policy against allowing visitors to roll down their windows, according to signs posted around the perimeter. Another sign reads, treasure your life, do not leave your car. And they mean it. What do you guys think?
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. All the communism, they had to add that extra rule in there because somebody didn't figure that out.
I like how they have to go over the loudspeaker like, hey, dummy, pull up.
Yeah. Do not feed the bear. I mean, do not feed the bear.
Did it have the window down watching the cats jump through the fire hoops?
Yeah, I feel like you have to, like, you know when they tell you to tune into a station, like when you're in a park? Like, it's just be like, do not feed the bears. Do not feed the bears.
Well, every radio station is just, we love China. Yeah. Make iPods.
Yeah, well, that's North Korea, apparently. Apparently, they
North Korea, they put the bears on the missiles as they shoot it up, try to hit America.
Now, when you guys, do you guys hunt bear in Jersey?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you get your permit. When, are they difficult to hunt, or, like, where did you put them on the hunting
scale? They're proving difficult.
Yeah, our father got one. I always see them like outside of the hunting season.
Yeah,
you know, I thought that the archery season that they opened up this year was gonna be my time to close the deal because I always see them during like October.
So you haven't closed it down
yet. I have not gotten one yet. Mm. I'm gonna get one and I'm gonna send you pictures.
Yeah,
you're talking I'm about down bears with that. And shit. Yeah, bear news. Jim Miller's reporting on his bears. Yeah, see. Bear news is going
to like
take
Super
off.
Troopers. Like, what is he doing to the bear?
This is a podcast. All right. It's going to be awesome, bro.
Story number two comes from USA Today. A bike collision with a grizzly bear killed a Forest Service cop.
Okay.
All right.
That's unfortunate.
In Great Falls, Montana, Forest Service law enforcement officer Brown Treat was fatally mauled by a grizzly bear after accidentally surprising and colliding with the animal while mountain biking.
The board released its finding on June 29th, blah, blah, blah. According to the report, Treat was mountain biking with a friend on the outer trail, and he collided with a grizzly bear with his bike at a high rate of speed after rounding a blind curve on the trail. Treat had access to the trail systems from his house and was reported to jog the trails with his wife almost every morning. He mountain biked on the trails, and apparently he was going 20 to 25 miles per hour, giving him only 2 or 3 seconds after rounding a corner to see a bear. The investigation found no signs of skidding or evasive steering, indicating Treat did not immediately see the bear and hit him at full speed.
He went as hot.
His last name is Treat, also. Mm.
There was skidding in his pants after he hit the bear.
Yeah.
To be fair, I mean, he did die, but he was living in Montana, so that's not living.
I would love to live in Montana. But
I've known people there. I mean, it's one of those. It's great for the first couple minutes. And then you realize I got to drive 2 hours to a Walmart.
Yeah. All right. Last one, guys. Bear attacks car in Chinese zoo.
You already read this one.
China.
Damn it, that's the wrong one.
Damn it, China.
Hold on, this one's the best. This one's the best. Third one, guys. Let me try again.
Shit show is this?
Bear.
Pretty shitty. Go on, Scott.
Bear dies after plummeting from helicopter.
Stop laughing while you read all this.
Bear A-Team.
Because they're all crazy bear stories. Officials are investigating after a bear fell to its death from a helicopter high over the jungles of Thailand last month.
What the hell was a bear doing flying a helicopter in Thailand?
That sounds like an awesome Disney movie.
I mean, well, while there's some agreement on the circumstances of the Asian black bear's death, it's unclearly exactly how the bear came to find itself on the helicopter in the first place. According to Bangkok Post, a bear was found hanging around a village near the Khao Yai National Park last month, but the Phuket Gazette reports the bear was injured when officials found it last November.
Well, the Gazette is reporting it. I gotta believe it, Scott.
They report the bear has spent the last decade being rehabilitated after it was found being kept as an illegal pet. Regardless, the bear found itself being transported by wildlife officials deep into the Khao Yai. There are reports which have been of the bear, which was sedated, waking up in the middle of the trip, finding itself dangling in a net attached to a helicopter, starting to panic. It appears there may have been a problem with the net itself. The helicopter encountered bad weather and quickly lost altitude. That's when the bear fell from the net.
You gotta read your weather reports when you're transporting a bear via helicopter. I mean, day one of
imagine
bear
being the people like in the village, like where the bear is like floating overhead, like you know, like sad.
Yeah, Black sad. Death indeed.
Black death indeed.
You probably could have shot that bear, you know. Maybe that's how you get your first, and all. Probably just acid dude with a helicopter.
It's funny that you can't find a bear to shoot, but these guys find bears to helicopter out
to drop out of helicopter.
To helicopter or go feed bread to, or
given the choice between shooting a mountain biker or a bear, I'd probably shoot the mountain biker.
Especially if they have that big cone helmet.
Oh.
You know, or the
and the bodysuit.
The tights, the bodysuit. But that was bear news, everybody.
You gonna play the theme song again?
No.
Oh, okay.
All right, Millers, let's get out of here. You guys also have a podcast, Millers and Pat and Jim and Dan. What's the podcast called?
The Hands On Podcast.
The Hands On Podcast. Right. Give us a little insight into it. You guys do it every week. What's going on with that?
Yeah, we do it just about every week. Right now we're going live on Facebook. You know, and then we post it to you know iTunes and all that.
What's it about? What's it about? Is it about MMA? What is it?
We know a little bit about MMA, so we like to talk about
a little bit.
We know a little bit. So we talked about you know what's currently going on in MMA, but we also kind of get into some of the things that we're doing, some of the projects and stupid stuff that we're doing, and then we like to go off on tangents every now and then, like zombies and oh. stuff like that.
Like Nate Diaz, straight up Nate zombie. Diaz. He's the guy, the man's a zombie.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Now, first off, if you watch, do you guys watch The Walking Dead?
Pat is obsessed with The Walking Dead.
I enjoy it.
The season's horrific, isn't it?
I don't think it's horrific.
Oh, God.
I'm a big fan, but I've been grinding my teeth on this one.
This one's bad.
They lost me, like, seasons ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get the hell out of here, guys. It's a late night. I want to thank you both. All three of you guys for coming on the podcast.
I'm not thanking you, Pat. I'm not thanking you.
If you don't give your last name,
I want to give you guys. There's two shirts there. There were the last two left inside. So Jim, it's a large shirt. So when you are bulking up, you'll feel good in it.
I wear a large all the time. I got a thick neck.
You got a thick neck. Yeah. No, Dan. Yo. If you're weight cutting, that shirt's the best one to wear in the gym.
Not anytime soon.
those are two those are two shirts for you guys. They're both large. I'm sorry, but when I get more shirts, I'll send them out to you guys. But what do you guys got coming up? Jim, Dan, any fights coming up? What's on the horizon? And where do people go to listen to you, see what's going on, say hello? What's up?
I don't have anything coming up. Just yet. I'm hoping to fight
Connor.
May or June. Yeah, well, unfortunately, after the last one.
Yeah.
You're behind Mayweather.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully fight, in the next couple months. And, I can be followed on Instagram and Twitter, @JimMiller_155. I'm on Facebook. The Hands On Podcast, you can follow us on Facebook and to watch the podcast live, the Hands On Podcast, and we're really original with the name, so it's the Hands On Podcast on Instagram, and then Hands On Podcast. There's no "the" on Twitter because we weren't allowed.
I know we weren't allowed verbal stands. We had to go with VS Comedy.
Yeah. So that's just
Dan. Anything coming up? Anything to promote?
Yeah, I got. Nothing coming up. I mean,
I'm going to be finishing this IPA right now.
Yeah, like I want another pizza. Yeah.
You guys also, we didn't touch on this, but maybe another time. But you guys have a gym.
Yes.
So why don't you promote that, Dan? Yeah. What is it?
So we got Miller Brothers MMA in Sparta, New Jersey. It's 22
Gale Court.
I think it was good where it was. He could hear me.
Yeah.
So 22 Gale Court, Sparta, New Jersey.
The gym's name.
we can. We got a Facebook page and Instagram and Twitter. So yeah.
Pat, tell us where we see these guys and what the hell you guys do with them.
It's a hard question to answer.
I know. We do somehow.
Podcast, I get to go hunting. And,
hunting.
I get beat up a little bit, so that's good.
Oh, you're in the fight game too?
No, but I do get beat up a little bit.
It's part of our podcast. We just beat Pat up.
Just beat Pat up.
Hey, best podcast ever.
It's awesome. There's going to be an opening soon. we've been having a good time with the podcast, and you should definitely check it out.
One thing I want to address before I get out of here, and we do a little closing. You posted a video yesterday with the Ultimate War. Who the hell was doing the Ultimate War? They're amazing.
I didn't post it. It wasn't yesterday. I just tagged that. That's tagged on my Twitter. Come on, bro. No get up with times. You can
I'm really down.
That's a pin.
That is
tweet.
Me dressed as
Scott
Beaker.
That's you.
That is me, bro. Warrior.
I got range.
You had his quotes.
I got range.
That's dude, you had the brimstone and the air smells like whatever it was. Wow. Talented dude right there.
Thank you very much.
You know,
have
so
have you seen the Macho Man
Savage?
The Macho Man is what set it off. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Take a look at that one.
I'm gonna have to, and I'll post it on.
And that one, like the Ultimate Warrior, I screwed it up.
Now what was that? At the gym?
Yeah, that was at the gym. A friend of ours who's a journalist. Stopped by and he does a live feed, so I wanted to come in and mess with him. So I decided to dress up as the Ultimate Warrior and do it. The Macho Man I did, that was like just on a whim. And I banged out like
You banged out the war pretty good. You had a bunch of quotes in that?
Yeah, I had a little bit. I had like a day to work on that one. So.
Yeah.
Solid.
So, thank you.
Solid.
Yeah.
All right. Burlow, anything to promote? Let's get the hell out of here.
Facebook.com, TheBurlow721, my weekly Tonight on the Walking Dead spoof. It's been kind of hard the last few weeks, and I'm dealing with it, so brings good comedy into there, so check that out.
Oh, yeah. And I want to promote, first off, let's thank the people at Tap House 15.
Well, there's nobody left.
There's no one left, but we can give them a little clap. We can give them a thank them for doing it, but we're also going to promote the comedy show on March 23rd, Sean Lynch headlining from The Walking Dead, a bunch of other funny comics. If you can go and review the show on iTunes, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Also, if you can check out Instagram at Verbal Shenanigans, I'm doing 30 guests in 30 days, all the shows that we've had on in the past, doing a little thing like that. And then, other than that, VS
Podcast Land.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. VS Comedy on Twitter. Check out Jim Miller. Check out Dan Miller. Check out their podcast and all that stuff. And root for them on Jim's next fight. He's going to be fighting me on the next episode.
Yeah, we ran.
Good night,
time,
people. Also.